This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome back. This is episode number 24 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers, and we're back for another episode. Probably not a ton of, you know, true what I guess you would consider Texas football news per se, but I'm going to touch on a few items. There was something I meant to mention in my last podcast, but a few weeks back at the end of April, there was a sports Longhorns Honors event. It was the first ever one that UT has hosted for all sports. Think of it kind of like a ESPYs or a NBA Awards or something, but for UT sports. So that was hosted. Just briefly, we'll touch on that. And then also we'll talk a little bit about official visits, not so much about how the ones that just recently took place this past weekend went. I will briefly cover them, but more so just kind of a general perspective of what takes place on those types of visits. And then if we have a little time, some Game of Thrones talk. So like I said, on last week's episode, you know, I'm a firm believer that like at this point you should be immersed in the show. And I mean, I'm recording this on a Tuesday night at 9:49 p.m. So you should be caught up. If you're not, I'll tell you when to stop. Again, that depends on if I get to that in the podcast or not. But like I said, let's jump things off. So like I said, at the end of April, UT had its first ever all sports Longhorns Honors event. Basically what it was is a chance to bring everybody together, say this is what it means to be a Longhorn, and to salute the very best of Texas athletics. So on that night, they honored the efforts on and off the playing fields and courts with awards that included the top scholar athletes, team and individual community leaders, breakout performers, student athletes who overcame adversity, top rookies, athletes of the year, and team of the year. So that was pretty cool. You know, kind of, I guess, the penultimate award for that is team of the year, and football took that honor, you know, on the backs of posting a 10-4 mark, which is the best one since the 2009 season. And then they won, you know, obviously the All-State Sugar Bowl. Were ranked number 9 in the final AP Top 25 poll, which was the first time being ranked since the end of the 2009 season where, you know, of course, as we all know, lost to Alabama in the national championship game. So that was pretty neat to see in the way of other guys that took home honors from the football team. The male breakout performance was Sam Ellinger. The male newcomer slash rookie performance of the year was shared between Caden Stearns of football and then Jackson Hayes on the basketball team. Andrew Beck was one of two recipients for the Sterkel Leadership Award. The other recipient for that award was a member of the volleyball team. I do not even want to butcher this young lady's name, but her first name is Yasmin. Last name, actually, I might be able to do this. Last name is Bedart Ghani, I think, is her name. So I apologize if I'm saying that wrong. The Team Community Service Award slash SAAC Bevo Cup Award went to the football team. And so that's pretty neat, you know, that they're doing that. That's not something they did, you know, when I was an athlete. You know, we kind of had our end of the year banquet that was specific to football. I think we maybe even had an academic banquet that honored, you know, people that had success in academics. But beyond that, there was nothing ever like this. So this is the first time they've done that. It covered achievements from spring 2018 along with the fall 2018 as well as winter 2019 under consideration. So it sounds like that's something they're going to, you know, do on an annual basis. They do that. One of the neat things I think they do a pretty good job of is keeping, you know, former lettermen involved. And so I did receive an invitation to this, just, you know, ultimately didn't have the time on the schedule to attend it. I think it was on like a Monday night or something. So, you know, schedule just didn't work out to where that was something I could do, but it was pretty cool. Something maybe to look forward to in the future. Another neat thing that took place this past weekend was that the football facilities, South End Zone and Moncrief Newhouse Athletic Center's expansion broke ground. That took place this past Saturday. And so, you know, effectively it was just a ceremony of them breaking ground on the new $175 million South End Zone project at the stadium. And so, you know, a number of football players, I believe Sam Ellinger and Zach Sackleford were present. They also had Coach Herman. He had athletic director and Chris Del Conte and some, you know, other important figures throughout the program. So I think that was a pretty cool thing to see. It'll be really neat to see it come to life. I had I think I talked about this before, but I had a chance to participate in a focus group last year about the South End Zone project. So I got to give some of my input, see some of the initial renderings for what was under consideration, you know, talk about pricing of the different I guess seating options that'll be available, you know, all the way from the super luxury suite boxes, the field level type suites and things of that nature. So all in all, I think it's going to be a really, really great project. Will be something that the team will be able to point to in the way of recruiting efforts, you know, as things continue to move on, because ultimately, as we know, everything, you know, really amounts to an arms race when it comes down to, you know, doing whatever it is you can to give you the most advantage, both from a truly, I guess, tactical perspective of your facilities, and then also just optically for what these kids are wanting to see these days. So I think that's a really neat thing. And then what else? I mean, I think that's pretty much it since the last time we talked. I know last time, you know, we mainly covered the NFL draft. I don't remember at the time of my podcast if PJ Locke had already signed with the Steelers or not as an undrafted free agent. I think he had, but if he hadn't, that is some news that is out there. But beyond that, we'll probably just be keeping an eye on, you know, how some of these mini camps go for some of these guys, get some what some of the early buzz is. I did see something that like Andrew Beck was paid the most of all of the Patriots undrafted free agents in terms of like guaranteed salaries. And I believe it was over $100,000. That's typically a pretty good indicator of the guys that'll at least make the practice squad. And so he certainly goes into a good situation there, you know, with them having had Gronk retire. So, you know, again, it'll just be interesting to kind of keep an eye on those things. But, you know, we're about to roll into that part of the year where it's just kind of like the dog days of summer, if you will, when it comes to Texas sports. So I'll probably just do a lot more conversation around, you know, just some of the things that I think maybe are interesting, do some more interviews with some guys, as well as just talk about, you know, maybe what's just going on in the sports world in general. You know, the NBA playoffs are in the full swing of things in the conference semis. Obviously, the one that I think I and most people have kept their eye on the most is the Warriors-Rockets series. So, you know, may end up having some conversation about that on future episodes. But I think probably the other, let's see, before we talk about the official visits, the other, you know, I guess little piece of news that's out there is that Brew McCoy hasn't filed his waiver yet. And, you know, from everything I've read on it, from some of the reporting that I've seen Anwar do on the topic over on Orange Bloods, you know, basically it's just a situation where they wanted to see kind of how things shook out with Justin Fields transferring from Georgia to Ohio State and Tate Martell transferring from Ohio State to Miami. Those are the guys that I would consider maybe the more higher profile transfers that you've seen take place this year that are not grad transfers. And so you would think that, you know, the success in both of those instances for those athletes would bode well for Brew McCoy. But then there's been some other instances where guys you would think have had like really legit claims. I think I saw something about one guy, you know, transferring effectively to be closer to his mother or a family member that was sick, and his waiver was denied. So you never know with the NCAA, you know, that organization, honestly, I just think they're in over their head. They never seem to make good proactive decisions. More than not, they tend to be reactive, and you know, I think they're just undermanned and not in touch with maybe the things that are necessarily best for the student athlete. But at the end of the day, that's the way the cookie crumbles. I still fully expect Brew McCoy to have full eligibility in the fall, but we will see how that goes in weeks to come. So, you know, one of the things that I think everybody has kind of tried to get accustomed to in this new recruiting landscape is the early signing period. And with that came the ability to move visits up and have them take place in the spring, because you have guys that are often trying to make decisions in the summer, and then even, you know, ultimately signing in the early signing period in December. So it requires a number of, systematic changes for coaches across the country. And I think Coach Herman and his staff do a really great job of kind of being on the cutting edge of all the different rules changes and things like that. And so they had their first official visit weekend this past weekend, and brought in, if I guess the information I've seen out there is correct, six guys for official visits, three of which were committed guys that are already committed to UT. And so those three commits are Logan Parr, Jake Majors, and Jalen Garth, all along the offensive line. And then along with them brought in the standout offensive line target, Chad Lindberg, safety Chris Thompson Jr., and then defensive end Vernon Broughton. And from everything I read, just seemed to be really glowing reports coming out of the official visit. One of the things I thought was really cool is the way that the staff has made it a point to introduce the concept of family. And so bringing in these three, you know, three offensive linemen that are already committed, along with Chad Lindberg, and continuing to sell them on the prospects of all playing together, I think, you know, goes a long ways. And then have allowed the commits families to form a bond as well. And so I think at the end of the day, that's something that, you know, just enough can't be said for. It's one thing for the coaches and the players to form relationships with these guys' families, but it's an entirely other thing for them to begin to form relationships with, you know, effectively the people that their sons are going to be with for the next, or rather, the families that, you know, will be going kind of on this journey together. And so I remember back in my day, like, my family got really close with Aaron Harris's family, with Justin Blaylock's family, with Matt Melton's family when we were going through the recruiting process. And then they were able to maintain those relationships, you know, throughout the entire time when I was in school. And so, you know, they could bounce ideas off of one another about travel and, you know, be able to coordinate to meet up, to go to dinner and to tailgate and stuff like that. And so those kinds of things are really important. From everything, you know, from all accounts, you know, Texas really knocked it out of the park with all of them. There was a few other guys that were expected to come in. One that continues to be pretty interesting is Mookie Cooper. He was previously committed to us. He's out of St. Louis, decommitted, but then, you know, kind of gave the party line of, you know, he was still going to keep his options open and Texas wasn't eliminated. And typically you can kind of rule a guy out. And I think I even said on a previous podcast, like, yeah, I don't know. But he was planning on actually coming back in. I don't think it was official visit. He was planning on coming in for an unofficial, if I'm not mistaken, which is even more impressive if he was coming in on his own dime. But there was some really bad weather in Austin this past weekend. And even now, as I'm recording, it's raining pretty hard outside. So hopefully can't, you know, hear any of the thunder or anything on this recording. But Mookie Cooper's flight got canceled, so he didn't make it in. And then also, you know, the stud duo from North Shore out of the Houston area, Zachary Evans and Damian George, neither of them made it in, and they were coming in on unofficial visits. But you can see that the staff is really doing everything they can to try and bring in elite talent and put them around each other. And so they have a definite plan in place. And so I think that's a great thing and a sign of things to come. And then something else that just broke this evening was that the JUCO linebacker Juwan Mitchell is going to be visiting Texas this weekend. He's currently committed to Minnesota, but sounds like that's going to go by the wayside pretty quickly. Texas just offered him last week. He also has visited Arkansas. And then he was teammates with Jacoby Jones at Butler County Community College, and Jacoby Jones is the defensive end that UT signed with the 2019 class that I believe is already on campus, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure I saw him out there during the spring. So, you know, that feather in UT's hat can't hurt by any means. And I imagine he's probably in pretty close contact with Jacoby and getting an idea for his experience. And, you know, when you look at our depth chart, especially considering that DeGabriel Floyd is going to be out for the 2019 season and possibly beyond, you know, there's certainly very thin at linebacker of all the spots, I would say, across the team. That would maybe be the one area that concerns me most, is just we don't have much depth there. So you really need your guys like Jeffrey McCullough, Joseph Asai to hit and hit big this year. You do have Caleb Johnson, I believe, was the JUCO transfer that's already there. But, I mean, it would seem like a no-brainer with this Juwan Mitchell kid. I think he's 6'2", 225. You know, so just seems to continue to kind of fit the mold of guys that we're recruiting. So hopefully that visit goes well and may have some information on that to come. I thought I would just kind of briefly talk about the official visit and what it's kind of like. I mean, obviously, you know, God. Now that I'm saying this, it sounds kind of crazy, but I went on my official visit to Texas. Jeez, it's 2019, May of 2019. I took my official visit to Texas in December of 2001. So it was almost 18 years ago, 17 and a half years ago. And wow, that is pretty crazy to say, but yeah, that is a fact. So I thought I would give some insight on kind of how these official visits go. Now, for me, it was a little different because I live in Austin. I grew up in Austin, so it was a very short drive for me down to UT. But even with that being said, since we were coming on our own dime, they pay for your gas. Now, like I said, you know, from North Austin, where I grew up, to UT's campus is a short drive. So it was probably only like, you know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 bucks that, you know, I think my parents got. But at the end of the day, it was, you know, cool. If you're coming from a farther distance, you know, somewhere else in Texas and driving, then like I said, they cover your expenses for gas, as well as for your family to come. And that's a big deal because a lot of times, especially for guys that are not in the area, those are some of the times that, you know, the coaches, you know, get to spend an extended amount of time with your family and really get the opportunity to kind of sell your family on the program as well as you. And so, you know, by all accounts, Coach Herman and his staff have done a really great job of catering each official visit, you know, to the specific players and catering it to the things that they're wanting to see, the things that they're interested in. You know, for example, you're going to kind of have one approach for a guy that's in high school versus a different approach for a guy that is a JUCO transfer, and maybe even a different approach for a guy like Parker Braun that was a grad transfer. So everybody is going to have some different things that they're looking to see. But generally speaking, it's an all expense paid trip. If you're coming in from, you know, out of state or a really, you know, far distance within the state, you know, they'll pay for a flight. Again, that's covered for your family as well. They put you up in a hotel, cover all of your transportation to and from whatever events you're going to, as well as get you some really good food while you're on campus. And then each player is typically hosted by a player that is currently on the roster. For example, I believe it was reported this past weekend that Chris Thompson Jr. was hosted by Caden Stearns. A lot of times they'll try and match up guys that are at the same position. Jalen Garth goes to the same high school that Roshan Johnson went to. So they had Roshan Johnson host him because there's some familiarity there. So, you know, you try to make connections with guys that, you know, would probably be at the same position or maybe have some history with one another. In my time at UT, I'm trying to think of some of the guys I hosted. At one point in time, I was playing fullback. So I hosted Jamal Charles. I think I co-hosted him. I think myself and Chris Obanaya hosted him. And so, you know, I guess I can say that I got Jamal to Texas, but, you know, that's probably not realistic, right? Like at the end of the day, I think he was just going to come. And so there wasn't anything special that I did, but, you know, you try to show them a good time. You try to tell them, you know, the real about what they're going to experience at Texas. And then it's also a good opportunity for the players to fill out you know, these guys. I can think of, you know, instances where, you know, after the visits, Coach Brown would bring us into his office and he would kind of ask like, hey, you know, what do you think about this guy? And this would give us an opportunity to kind of say, you know, this is how we think he would fit in. Or if it was a guy that was completely stuck up, if it was a guy that, you know, we didn't think would work hard, if it was a guy that just didn't really feel, you know, fully fit the culture of our locker room, we would tell Coach Brown that. And that didn't happen often, but there were some times that that did happen. And so I imagine that's, you know, probably a practice that they continue. Typically what's involved on an official visit, they give some form of an academic presentation. So, you know, depending on what it is that the student athlete is looking to study at the collegiate level, he's going to spend a considerable amount of time with some of the academic advisors. Sometimes that even involves touring, you know, just the campus itself and showing them where some of the different buildings are. You know, for me at one point, I was really big on doing engineering. So that would show me, you know, where the engineering building is. Obviously, a lot of guys are interested in business. So, you know, it's great for us to have McCombs being as highly ranked as it is. And so a lot of it is just building out the picture for the student athlete of what they can expect over the next 4 years, how they can, you know, see themselves fitting in on campus, and then even how, you know, things that they could pick up on campus would ultimately benefit them in the long run. So there's a lot of time spent on selling them on the university as a whole and how it can really set you up for life after football. And I think that's really important. Depending on when they attend, and that's the interesting part of, you know, some of these visits now taking place, right? Football activities really aren't going on. So back when you know, we used to do our big visit weekend in December, and I still think they do that. At the time, we would have a football banquet. And so some guys would get to attend that. And then they would have some time with the players afterwards. And, you know, full disclosure, we used to take the guys out. So we would, you know, I mean, we partied in college. We were, you know, college athletes. And so sometimes we would take them with us. I think there's, you know, stories about different things that have happened at one time or another. I probably won't dive into that. There's other people that have that information that you may hear, you know, speak on some of those topics from time to time. But for the most part, those things always went well. But we just wanted to, you know, give them a feel of what it was going to be like. Then on Saturday, typically early Saturday morning, we would have a practice. And so it would give guys a chance to come out to that practice, check things out. And then, you know, like I spoke of, they would do their academic tours, would get a good meal in. A lot of times they'll go out to the coach's house and so, you know, have some food that'll be catered there. So real relaxed environment. And particularly, you know, with what the group was this past weekend, there was only about six of them in total. It gives you a lot of opportunity to give them, you know, a lot of individual attention that you sometimes can't otherwise do, you know, when you have, you know, a bunch of recruits in, let's say, for a game or something like that. And so this just gives them, you know, more of that one-on-one attention, ability to continue to, you know, develop some of the bonds that they have with the different players and, you know, just really get an opportunity to sell them on the program. At one point or another, each, you know, player and their families get a chance to sit down one-on-one with Coach Herman and then typically their position coach as well. And so they can, you know, full on layout, kind of a customized plan of this is how we envision you being able to help us at the University of Texas. And then, you know, like I said, eventually Sunday rolls around and everybody heads back, you know, on their prospective visit. So it's typically, I want to say, about a 48-hour visit. And so that's kind of the gist of an official visit. Now, the unofficial visits are when guys come in on their own dime. UT can't pay for all these things for them. You know, if there's, you know, like I said, if this is, you know, happening during a period in which different sporting events are going on, sometimes that's another thing that'll happen. So, you know, you may take your group of guys to a basketball game or take your group of guys, you know, that would be, I guess, a lot of times for the commits or for the guys that are coming on visits in early January. When they're still kind of waiting to decide for the February signing period, you would see something like that happen. And so that's another example of something that could happen on an official visit. But by and large, that's what they're about. You know, Sunday you go back your own way and you hope that, you know, as a staff and the players that have hosted them, you've done a good job of representing what they can come to expect from the university. So that in summation is kind of what an official visit is. Each student athlete has the opportunity to go on a total of five official visits for different, you know, schools. And, you know, if you, I think, have your mind made up enough, you typically shut it down. But then there's some guys that just haven't traveled a lot. And, at the end of the day, I think a lot of people kind of get caught up in, well, if he really wants to come to Texas, then he won't go on any other visits. And generally speaking, I understand the premise of that, right? But I think what you have to remember is, like, these are just kids, man. And sometimes, like, a lot of these kids haven't traveled a lot. You know, it's expensive to travel. You know, sometimes they come from family environments that, you know, couldn't necessarily afford to travel on their own dime. And so just getting to see different places in the country, different places throughout the state, have the red carpet rolled out for you, all expense paid trip, I don't blame them, you know. And so you're going to have some guys that are going to do that. There's some guys that do enjoy the recruiting process and all the attention that comes with it. And so some of that is just riding the wave, you know, and understanding that at the end of the day, these are kids, but also recognize that they're making a decision that's going to impact their future. And so if they feel like they need to go out and get some more information, more power to them. So, you know, I thought maybe that would be helpful, and hopefully it was. Not too redundant, you know, from things that you already knew. But if you ever have questions about those type of things, feel free to let me know. You can reach me on all my social media at Marcus Myers. I'm always happy to answer any questions or at least provide my perspective on, you know, different things, you know, relating to stuff like that. So we are now at about the 26 minute mark. So if you have not watched the latest episode of Game of Thrones, I would implore you now to go ahead and cut the podcast off. I appreciate you listening. Come back next week and we'll have some more content for you. But now I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about my thoughts on the latest episode of Game of Thrones. All right. So here we go. So in episode 3, obviously, we had the big battle at Winterfell. Number of people died. And so, you know, episode 4, you kind of expect, all right, there's going to be a step back in some of the action, right? And so mainly, you know, we start out with, like, them having to burn the bodies of a lot of their friends, you know. And so you see, you know, different people that are attached to people mourning their loss. So there's a scene that, you know, shows Sansa with Theon, and she puts the little sigil for House Stark on Theon, because, you know, he grew up kind of with the Starks. And then Daenerys and Jorah, you know, Daenerys, you know, is crying, and you see her bend down, kiss Jorah on the forehead and kind of whisper something. What's my other man's name? I always forget him. I love Game of Thrones, but I'm not the best with all the names. I said this in the last episode. What's his name? Flaming Sword Guy is what I call him. The guy that kept, you know, being brought back from by the Lord of Light. You see Arya go and stand over him, because basically, like, he helped the Hound and her get away. And without, you know, him dying, most likely she would have died. And so you see this, you know, really poignant scene of them, you know, all going to burn these bodies. John makes, you know, a pretty impassioned speech. And then from there, they're kind of celebrating. And this is where you continue to see, like, Daenerys, at least the way the show is positioning her, kind of going the way of her father, the Mad King, right? Like, she sees Jon getting praised by Tormund and sees everybody, you know, really flocking to him. And keep in mind, she has the information now that Jon is really Aegon Targaryen, so he has a true claim to the throne. And you know, you can tell she doesn't like it. And she ends up going to talk to John. And basically, you know, you see her in the scene, you know, visibly shook by the fact that John could have a claim to the throne. And she even says something along the lines of, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't want the throne, they're going to try and take what's mine, you know. So all her life, she's been centrally focused on, you know, getting this throne back and being the ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. And so you still have this contrast of Sansa, you know, kind of beefing with her and stuff. And so John, you know, Sansa is basically suggesting, like, hey, you know, we just went through this rough battle. We've lost all kinds of warriors. Our people are depleted. The dragons are beat up. And so we need some time to, like, chill. You know, we need some time to recover. And, you know, John kind of tries to take up for Daenerys and basically says that, like, they're going to do what the queen says to do. And as soon as that's happened, you know, Arya pulls up on him and is basically like, we need a word with you. And so then you see, you know, the scene of the Stark children where it's Bran, Arya, Sansa, and Jon out by, you know, by the tree or whatever in the Godswood. And they're basically telling her, like, we don't trust her, you know, and, you know, Jon's not really trying to hear it. And then, you know, you kind of have some conversation around, you know, him being, you know, their brother and family. And then basically he makes them swear that, you know, what he's about to tell them, they'll never repeat. And he has Bran, you know, reveal to them that he's really Aegon Targaryen. And then next thing we know, you know, Tyrion and Varys know about it. They get into some conversation there. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how they actually end up handling that as they're, you know, on the way to King's Landing. And then you just, I don't know. I see how some people nitpick some of the episode, but I thought they did a perfect job of setting everything up for this next battle to come. I do think, you know, they kind of had to rush some things. You know, I felt like the dragon could have died a little more valiantly. You would think, like, with the dragon flying, that somehow he would be able to see all of Euron's ships. But, you know, we see in this episode, like, how, you know, just how ruthless Cersei is. We see how, you know, she's been planning this all along. They got these big ass, like, dragon spears, I guess is what I'll call them, or harpoon type things that they've developed. And so Euron is able to end up killing one of the dragons. So now Daenerys is down to one dragon. They got tons of these, you know, bow and arrow type things or whatever. They mess up all the ships. But then in the middle of it, somehow they take Missandei. Now, of course, you know, again, you poke holes in it. How are they going to take Missandei without Grey Worm knowing? I don't know. But I know this. I picked Missandei to die, and they ended up chopping her head off. So, you know, I thought, okay, like, this episode gave me what I was expecting. You know, this is the typical Game of Thrones that I'm thinking of. Character we've come to know and love ends up getting killed. And then, you know, I think there was a couple of things that were, you know, evident from that happening. Daenerys knows, like, you know, this is kind of no holds barred. Cersei really is ruthless. And then Tyrion finally sees, like, there's nothing he can do to convince his sister, because he even tries to implore to her about her being pregnant, you know. And I was talking about this in a group in my group chat with the fellas about whether or not, like, when Tyrion was saying something about him being pregnant, did Euron turn his head or not? And so one of the guys said, nah, he didn't. Somebody else said that they remembered that he did. So I'm going to have to go back and watch the episode. But I kind of wonder, like, is that, you know, maybe a seed being planted of, you know, Euron kind of realizing, like, wait a minute, like, maybe Cersei's not actually pregnant with my child, you know? And so that was interesting. The scene with Jaime and Brienne was kind of weird to me. I get where they were going with it. And I guess, you know, Jaime was probably being, and this is something else that one of the guys in the group chat pointed out, was probably being as harsh as he was with Brienne to make sure that she didn't follow him because she didn't want him to die. What it now makes me wonder is he really going back for Cersei, or is he going back to kill her? There's a part of me that still believes he's going to be the one to kill her. We see Arya and the Hound on, I think they're on the King's Road on the way to King's Landing. So obviously, you know, setting up the battle that the Hound is going to have with the Mountain. The Hound says something about he's not planning on coming back, and Arya says the same. So there's been some, you know, talk that maybe that's foreshadowing of her death. Ultimately, at this point, I'm kind of in the camp of I just don't want Arya or Tyrion to die. Anybody else can pretty much get it. I predicted that Arya would be the one to kill the Night King. I also predicted that Sansa would be the one to ultimately sit on the throne. Not sure if either of those happen, but I know Arya killed the Night King. Not sure if Sansa is really going to be the one to sit on the throne, but that was my pick when one of my boys did a survey for us in the group. So it'll be interesting to see how things played out. I think, again, in this coming episode, this Sunday for episode 5, looks like the guy that filmed or the guy that directed episode 3, as well as the Battle of the Bastards, is directing this episode. So we know, you know, there's a big battle coming. And I just feel like there's got to be another twist. There's got to be something, you know, Tyrion knows that he can't appeal to Cersei's sensible side. So maybe he goes back, you know, to using his mind and figuring out a way, you know, to get, you know, some more army members. I think, you know, the Vale still comes into play. I would imagine Jon and crew are all on their way down, you know. And so I feel like something's going to happen with the Golden Company. You know, maybe Tyrion can manipulate them somehow. Makes me wonder, you know, does Bronn come back into play? Because now, instead of killing Jaime and Tyrion, you know, they promised him Highgarden. So effectively, Bronn, you know, is more, his rooting interest is going to be for the Tyrion side of things to beat Cersei. And so it makes me wonder, like, is Tyrion going to somehow, like, convince maybe the Iron Bank to back him or to pull their funding? You know, there was a scene where in one of the prior seasons where the guy from the Iron Bank is basically talking about betting on a winner. So, you know, maybe if Tyrion can convince him of the fact that, like, Cersei's willing to burn it all to the ground. So at the end of the day, like, if you're backing a horse that, you know, really isn't ruler over much of anything because it's all rubble, then, you know, what are you really backing? I don't know. That's probably pretty far-fetched, but, you know, that's just something that I've been kicking around in my head. I feel like Arya is going to somehow have to use, you know, her disguise to kill somebody. You know, there's a part of me that's been thinking that that should be Cersei, but, you know, again, I think it would be more poetic if Jaime kills her. So more to come. I'll definitely be tuned in. A lot of people had problems with the episode. People have been talking about the writing has been trash. But, you know, the more and more I've been thinking about it, like, this is a fantasy world, man. Like, there's only so much that they can do. And I felt like episode 4 was a really good episode. I honestly had more complaints about episode 3 than I did episode 4. And I liked the way, you know, that they took us post, I guess, Night King War. You know, just kind of resetting the stage. But obviously, you know, another battle is about to come. So I'll be tuned in Saturday night or Sunday night rather. And, you know, eager to see what unfolds. We can talk about it a little bit next week. Feel free to let me know, you know, maybe what some of your theories are, what your thoughts are. And we'll go from there. But, you know, as always, appreciate the guys on the Yak Network. Certainly Ross for doing all the, you know, producing end of things and just giving me the platform to be able to sit up here and talk, you know, about some football and talk about Game of Thrones and talk about whatever the hell's on my mind. So, you know, like I said, I appreciate all of you for listening. You certainly could be doing other things with your time, so that's not lost on me. And, you know, yeah, that's going to do it. Again, this is Marcus Myers. This was episode 24 of the Until the Whistle podcast, and we'll catch you the next time the whistle blows.